This is MIMO Med Talk. I'm Amanda Wild, your host, and joining me today is Chief of Maimonides Division of Dermatology, Dr. Daniel Bushin. We're talking about melanoma, a skin cancer which is detectable and treatable, but can be deadly. Dr. Bushin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
First of all, let's get a bead on melanoma itself. What is it? How does it differ from other types of skin cancers?
Well, melanoma is a skin cancer. We would call it a neoplasm. That is different from other common skin cancers. We call these other cancers non-melanoma skin cancers. So the distinction being generally non-melanoma, things like basal cell, squamous cell, as compared to melanoma, which, just like you said, can be deadly. Most common skin cancers can be treated, they can be excised, they can be treated sometimes with simple excisions. But melanoma, although it can be treated with simple excisions, as compared to these other skin cancers, can be deadly. Now, non-melanoma skin cancers like squamous cell carcinoma, for example, can also be deadly, but the deadliest of all skin cancers is melanoma. And not uncommonly, patients, even after an excision of a melanoma, can still die of the disease.
So are there other key statistics we should know about melanoma prevalence?
Well, the prevalence of melanoma has been increasing over the last several decades due to multiple factors, including changes in ozone, including changes in patient behavior with more outdoor activities like leisurely activities that would include tennis or golf, for example.
So primary factors that contribute to the development of melanoma are?
Well, the primary factor would be sun or ultraviolet light. But an important risk factor, apart from, let's say, the environment, is the patient's own immune system. And that makes sense because now, for many cancers, people are aware of this entity called immunotherapy. And immunotherapy really was born out of melanoma, meaning that it was discovered that the status of a patient's immune system is essential, not only in predisposing them or preventing them from getting a skin cancer, but also in treatment. So, for example, if your immune system is normal, you have no other medical problems, your immune system is fully functional, that is highly protective in terms of melanoma and other cancers, for that matter. Patients with suppressed immune systems who are immunocompromised, whether it be from disease, let's say HIV, or iatrogenic, and by that I mean an induced state of immunosuppression. For example, patients with organ transplants, their immune systems are suppressed so that the organs can survive, but at the same time, these patients have an increased risk of melanoma. Interestingly, there are other diseases that themselves predispose to melanoma. For example, Parkinson's disease. Patients with Parkinson's disease, for example, have an increased risk of melanoma. And incidentally, patients with melanoma have an increased risk of developing Parkinson's. Now, why that's the case, why patients with Parkinson's disease are predisposed to melanoma, is not clear. There are many studies exploring this. But again, in answer to your question, there are several factors that predispose one to the development of melanoma, the most important being the status of your immune system.
And with more immune system diseases around right now, it seems, could that be contributing to what you see in the rise of melanoma?
Well, not necessarily. I think, though, people now who are involved with melanoma are keenly aware of the importance of the status of the immune system in evaluating a patient. So when a patient first comes to see me, I focus on asking relevant questions that will tell me whether their immune system is functioning well or not. And that would pertain to all cancers. Years ago, I think the importance of an immune system was not as much appreciated, a functioning immune system, as it is today.
So speaking of evaluation, how are diagnoses of melanoma made?
Well, I think the first step is, when I first see a patient, is to assess the risks they may have for the development of melanoma. And these include risks that are intrinsic to the patient, such as the color of their skin, the color of their eyes, the color of their hair. Remember that patients who are very fair redheads, blondes, blue-eyed, gray-eyed, very white individuals, these patients are at high risk for sun damage and at high risk for all kinds of skin malignancies, including melanoma. So in addition to intrinsic factors that I just described to you, there are extrinsic factors as well, including, for example, an occupation. If a patient is working, for example, outside, if he's a landscaper, if the patient is working for the transportation department and is busy repairing roads, or people who work on bridges. I have several patients who are iron workers who work, for example, on the Verrazano Bridge, who've developed melanoma from years of sunlight and cutaneous chronic sun exposure. Those patients are at high risk. Another group would be those patients who engage in leisurely activities outside. Golfers, a good example. Bald Irish cops, bald Irish rich guys who play golf on the weekends. When they forget to wear that hat, the top of their head, for example, is chronically exposed to sunlight, and those patients often will develop malignancy, skin cancers on the top of the head. Having said that, you know, it's also important to realize that melanoma is not just a white person's disease. I've seen melanoma in every race, both men and women, blacks, Hispanics, Asians. But interestingly, in these non-white groups, melanoma can occur in unusual sites. There's an entity, for example, called aquamelanoma, where melanomas will occur on the lower extremities or the hands, the bottom of the feet, the soles. Aquamelanoma is much more common in black individuals. Similarly, there are other rare variants of melanoma. For example, there's a very rare variant of melanoma called mucosal melanomas, which can occur in the genital area, but as well in the mouth. And these are very rare, but they're more common in Asian patients. In fact, we had a patient at Maimonides with a mucosal melanoma, noted incidentally in the mouth. In terms of diagnosing patients, once I assess whether they're high, if I assess that a patient is high risk, then I think the most fundamental thing is a very thorough, focused exam with abundant lighting. So what I'll do is, a patient, of course, will disrobe. They'll often keep the underwear on or the bra on. I look in those areas too. But so the patient's comfortable, I have them leave the undergarment on initially. And I will do a very slow, methodical examination from head to toe with the use of dermoscopy. And a dermatoscope is nothing more than a special light that we use to kind of examine underneath the skin without biopsying every single lesion. And I think, again, the use of the dermatoscope together with the abundant lighting in the room itself, in the examination room itself, along with, again, a very slow, methodical exam, is the way to diagnose and catch melanoma.
So who needs regular skin checks?
Right, good question. If we go back to my original remark about risk factors, skin checks are important for people who are at high risk. So again, who's high risk? You have to collect and review all the risk factors. So those patients that are fair and light, red hair, blue eyes, etc., these are, again, we talked about intrinsic factors. We also talked about the status of the immune system. So patients with decreased immune systems need annual checks at least. Patients with, we talked about Parkinson's disease. Patients with family history, melanoma as compared to non-melanoma skin cancer, has a large genetic component. So patients who tell me that their mother had a melanoma, or that their mother and father had a melanoma, or sometimes they'll tell me that multiple family members had melanoma, these patients are high risk. Again, when I review, when I see a patient, let's say there are 10 risk factors, big risk factors, I'm often in my head counting these risk factors. And the more risk factors they accumulate, 1, 2, 3, 4, the higher we get, the more in my head I say, well, this patient is very high risk. I need to look at this patient extra carefully and perhaps more frequently than I would someone lower risk, obviously. For example, very high risk patients I'll see every 3 months. A patient, for example, newly diagnosed with melanoma needs an exam every 3 months for a year and then often every 6 months thereafter. Why? Because there's such a thing as called a sequential melanoma, meaning that once you have been diagnosed with a melanoma, it's not uncommon for a patient to develop another melanoma, especially within the first year after diagnosis. I had a patient several years ago who had, I think it was 4 melanomas diagnosed in a period of a year and a half. And so these patients need very thorough and head-to-toe examinations frequently.
With that in mind, like all cancers, early detection improves melanoma treatment outcomes. Are there early signs of melanoma that people should be aware of?
Right, that's absolutely correct. I mean, like any cancer, the earlier a cancer is detected, including melanoma, the better the prognosis. That's always the case. The problem with that is that early cancer is often difficult to diagnose, and in terms of signs and symptoms, difficult for a patient to appreciate, because if you think about cancer in general as being, I look at cancer as basically being something other than what normal is, right? And that's important to know. Like in medical school, we often study normal anatomy for years, because once you know what normal is, it's easy to appreciate what abnormal is. Having said that, early abnormality, early cancer, can be extremely challenging to diagnose because it often is completely asymptomatic and can often still mimic normal anatomy. It's very easy, for example, to diagnose late-stage melanoma or late-stage cancer. Patients will have symptoms, bleeding, pain, etc. But early melanoma has none of that. I think the most important thing for patients listening, for prospective patients or listeners to this podcast, is to appreciate that if they have risk factors, and by the way, I've listed a few, but these risk factors are easily found by a simple Google search, simply Googling risk factors melanoma and you'll pop up with a million. But if you're light and fair, if you have a family history of melanoma, if your immune system is suppressed, these things should alert patients to say, you know what, let me get a full body check. A good analogy would be, for example, let's say a patient who smokes and has no symptoms whatsoever of lung cancer, is breathing normally, has no cough, is not losing weight. Early lung cancer, for example, could be present without any symptoms, but these patients may benefit from a CAT scan to detect early lung carcinoma. Similarly, patients who have high risk, who have risk factors for melanoma, should get a body check, even though they have no symptoms whatsoever, nothing's changing, just because they have these risk factors.
Are there preventive measures individuals can take to reduce the risk of developing melanoma?
Sure. I mean, given the fact that sunlight, ultraviolet light, is the main carcinogen that contributes to the development of melanoma, sunscreen protection, hats are important, and especially these habits should be initiated at an early age. So if those kids who are light and fair, redheads, for example, you see them at the beach and they're all covered with sunscreen, well, that's important because their skin type has so little photoprotection that they need that extra help. So the behaviors that would be relevant are, again, sunscreen and hat. And that's important to know today because there's a lot of, unfortunately, fake news and misinformed news about sunscreens. Sunscreens are generally very safe. People ask me all the time, what sunscreens? There are so many good brands of sunscreen out there, and patients can use them without spending a fortune. Brands that we all know about, like Neutrogena or Aveeno, these are all good sunscreens. Also, a hat is essential. And I think also people can modify their behavior. The idea of baking on the beach for 8 hours, although sad to say people still do it, should really be, frankly, frowned upon. Of course, one could say that I'm biased and I don't really mean to be a party pooper, but I really think people who certainly are high risk should not be baking at the beach for hour after hour. And if they do so, they should be going preferably in the early morning or the late afternoon or early evening. And they should avoid going to the beach from, for example, in peak afternoon hours when the sun is strongest.
Mad dogs and Englishmen are the only ones who do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you are the chief of Maimonides Division of Dermatology, so you're best equipped to answer this next question, which is, what makes your dermatology care at Maimonides stand out?
Good question, and certainly a fair one. I think from my perspective, what makes my practice stand out is the fact that my practice is really solely cancer-focused, meaning that I feel so strongly about this, and I'm quite passionate about finding melanoma. I think there's, frankly, few things as satisfying as finding malignancy in its early stage when it's completely curable simply by cutting a lesion out. But what makes my practice unique is that I really don't mix oil and water, meaning I don't do any cosmetic dermatology. I really focus on skin cancer per se and complex medical dermatology, but I think that's essential because I really don't believe that, although many dermatologists do it, I really don't believe if you're a busy dermatologist going from one room where you might be, for example, injecting Botox to the next room where you're dealing with a high-risk patient who may have a melanoma, I just intellectually and philosophically, I don't really think that works. I think melanoma is core when you have a provider who really is focusing on finding melanoma and treating melanoma. Moreover, the facilities of Maimonides are quite unique. When I was hired here, I insisted on having a room with lots of ambient light, and my main office is housed in the specialty pavilion on the fifth floor, where we have huge windows, and in addition to that, we have vertical lighting in the room and ceiling lighting, so that when patients come in, they're often wowed by the lights. And frankly, that wonderful lighting that we have in this examination room really allows for a very thorough and meticulous skin examination.
So equipment is top and the facilities are perfect for the work that you're doing.
Yeah, and I think also, again, as I said, I think it's also the philosophical approach. I really do believe that patients who are high risk for melanoma should be seeing providers, dermatologists who are really focused on the disease and not doing everything under the umbrella of dermatology.
Right. Well, Dr. Bhushan, thank you so much for this important information and your work that is focused on finding and curing melanoma.
Well, it was a pleasure, Amanda, and thanks for having me.
Pleasure here, too. That was Dr. Daniel Bhushan, Chief of Maimonides Division of Dermatology. For more information, visit MIMO.org. Follow us on social at MIMO Health. To make an appointment, call 718-283-6300. For general information, visit MIMO.org. If you found this MIMO MedTalk podcast helpful, please share it on your social media channels. To listen to additional episodes of MIMO MedTalk, visit MIMO.org. Thank you so much for joining me today on MIMO MedTalk.